You're listening to the Marginally Geeky Show, the Epically Geeky Book Club.
Greetings and welcome to the Marginally Geeky Show. I'm your host for this morning, Eugene Stevens. Today I'm joined by Sean, Ray, and Chris, and Jen. How are y'all doing?
Hi. I'm over.
Okay, this should be an interesting episode. Today, or this month's episode, we're recording a little bit late just because of time and everything, but we are recording Making It So by, it was both written and read by Patrick Stewart. This was your pick, right, Jen?
Yeah.
And why did you pick this book?
I thought that, well, one, it fits the geeky theme. Everyone here is a fan of his work, I think, and kind of also... I heard him do an interview on probably Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend and talking about the book and kind of some of the stories from it. And I think that's what turned me on to it initially. I didn't realize he had written a book and I thought, oh, that could be interesting. So yeah, figured this was a good way to get it out there and see what it was about. So
nice. Well, normally at this point I'd ask you to give us a brief rundown of the story, but it's pretty much his autobiography. So
It's just his life.
And unfortunately, looking over some of the questions, I don't, you know, some of them aren't really necessarily going to apply to this because, you know, it's an autobiography, whereas, you know, otherwise being fiction, but like characters, I don't know if we could talk about the characters he's played, but I guess we'll just start around with what did you think? Did you enjoy it or not? Start with you, Jen.
Yeah, I think overall I enjoyed it. It was a lot of, like, a lot more backstory and detail on his earlier works, which, I mean, makes sense because he had 40 years of work before he became big in the sci-fi world. And I actually liked all the theater stories. I don't know how other people felt because I'm really into theater, but I figured that might not have been so popular with everyone. And overall, yeah, I mean, he's a great narrator. His voice is great. But I was a little, like, I guess, taken aback with all of his love interests and, like, what a ladies' man he was.
Philandering.
Like, oh, my. Yeah. Oh, my, Patrick. But, yeah, I liked it overall.
Nice. Sean, thoughts?
Anything to do with Star Trek, I'm in. And Patrick Stewart was – I was – reading this one anyway. I've got a hard copy of it and stuff like that, which if you do this, like, yeah, it's great listening to Patrick Stewart, but he's got a lot of pictures in the book.
Oh, okay.
Well, so lots of his mam. So, but and his dad and his brother Trevor and stuff like that. So it's kind of cool that way. There wasn't any big surprises for me. Like I named my firstborn after him. So I kind of knew about all the philandering and stuff like that. His interest with that was Vash in TNG episode. That was who the actress who played Vash kind of thing is where it kind of started falling apart for the marriage thing. No, it was really good. I really enjoyed his early, like when he was a kid and stuff like that. When it jumped into the theater stuff, I wasn't as impressed. Like there was a lot of name dropping. And I think if you were into theaters, you would know more of the people. And I'm like, okay, that's nice, but whatever. The big one, Brian Blessed. I did not know he worked with Brian Blessed, who is just friggin' amazing for all you Blackadder fans. He was the Loud King. But and then going back into the Star Trek stuff, it was really good. So there was a big chunk of the theater stuff, and I'm like, this is getting old, kind of thing. So
War Shakespeare, got it. Yeah,
that was basically it. And but I enjoyed his enthusiasm, but I'm like, nah, that's enough of that. So, but anyway, all in all, I really enjoyed it. I'm glad I listened to it, and I'm glad I have it.
I didn't know a lot about his backstory. So, I mean, I knew, you know, he came from theater. I remember that was, you know, I remember even when, you know, TNG started, everyone was just like, you know, we have this, you know, Shakespearean trained theatrical, you know, actor that's going to be doing the new captain. I'm just like, oh, okay, that maybe they're taking it serious. That's kind of cool. Yeah, didn't know about his love life or whatever. And I was surprised when he starts talking about how his fellow TNG mates were kind of just like taken aback by his horrible the way he eats, apparently. Like, apparently he lacks it. And I'm just like, you're Sir Patrick Stewart. How does this happen? Like, this doesn't make sense to me. But whatever, it is what it is. But no, I did enjoy it. I always enjoy listening to autobiographies when by the person themselves, because a lot of times, I think he did this as well, where he steps out and he's like, "This wasn't in the actual book. This is extra. This is something else I just thought about." And I do enjoy that whenever you get that in an audio version of the book. So, but no, yeah, I'm like y'all. I love the man's voice. I love the man's work. I'm like you, Sean, and when I'm like, this is a lot of theater. This is a lot. And you're right. Like, I'm sure if I was in that world, I'd be just like, you work with who? And just like mind blown constantly. And otherwise I'm just like, okay, I'm sure that's probably a big deal. But then, you know, you get to the TNG stuff and you know, he barely, you know, even kind of really doesn't really even talk about X-Men stuff too much, but, yeah, that's, you know, and then it's just funny because, you know, all of us grew up watching TNG and he's just like, yeah, you know, me and Mike would hang out and like Michael Dorn. Oh, so you just call him Mike because, you know, he's your buddy and you just hang out. And yeah. So, but yeah, I enjoyed it. So, Ray, Chris.
Me? All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this. I am fascinated by how someone gets to where they are in their life. Mm-hmm. And so to hear all of the influences in his theater and to hear all of those, the name dropping to me didn't bother me because I'm not familiar with a lot of those people. But that being said, I was really interested in how he was influenced as a child and into like how he had his aunt had the conversation with him about, I think it was his aunt or grandmother. Yeah. So the grandmother having the conversation with him and just the over all of those influences having a huge impact with him. And as we're sitting here talking about it and I'm kind of listening to all of you talk, I'm reminded of Ishmael. It's like we're listening to Ishmael's journey, mm-hmm. But as Patrick's journey. So that's what I was more interested in, how he takes his influences and how he uses it to create his characters and all the other things. So really interested. I could listen to the man talk for a while, so I was good.
Chris?
Patrick Stewart holds a special little place in my heart because he looks so much like my beloved granddad who passed away about 5 years ago. Like, yeah. They're the same height, same shiny bald head, build. My granddad's parents, fashion sense, just cool, just oozes cool. My granddad was the coolest. He liked jazz. Like, he was so cool. And so Patrick reminds me a lot of my granddad. And my granddad had humble beginnings too, and his parents were from not the same part of England. They were from Birmingham, but like small town, really hardworking, all the kind of stuff. War, like my great granddad was in both world wars, that kind of thing, and came home with a lot of that whole post-traumatic stress. And yeah, just listening to him talk about how much he loved his mother. I was like, oh, because that was my granddad too. My granddad loved his mom because he was born. My great grandmother didn't get married till she was 36 and then banged out three boys, my granddad being the youngest, much like Patrick was only 5 years younger than my granddad. And so just the similarities, like how white their hair, like everything. And so listening to him and his rasp, and I was just like,
yeah,
my granddad. And it was very sweet. And I know enough-ish about kind of theater that some of the names was like, ooh, oh yeah, that's kind of cool. I
looked up some of his crushes and I don't blame him for them at all. Like, oh yeah, I know.
And just, yeah, like how he got his start and how small it all was. Because, you know, we remember him as, you know, Captain Picard. We don't, it's hard for us, especially the age we are, to imagine him being younger than that and never not always being famous. Yeah. So for him to be like, he didn't get his first movie role till he was 35. And he just planned on being a theater actor like his whole life. And the way that that works with family, how you have kids around that. Also did not realize he was a ladies' man. That one was a little bit, I was like, oh.
Every 5 minutes it was like, and then there was so-and-so I had a crush on and we had a fling and a this. And I'm like,
yeah, just
rude.
Carrying him through his adulthood. But I really liked it. And the fact that he's still very active in his life at 84 and still like giving it. And I just think it was, I love him.
Same. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm like I said, I'm kind of looking through some of the questions and were there any particular stories in particular that you greatly enjoyed or that kind of stuck out to you? I will say this, the whole time I was thinking when he talks about how like he was very, very like the definition of dirt poor growing up. And he had very few things, but he had a Monopoly set. And of course, the whole time I'm thinking, I was like, oh, why does that have to be Monopoly? I hate Monopoly. But just listening to him to talk about that, and the thought popped into my head, not that Will Wheaton is doing any more episodes of Tabletop, but how fantastic would it be to have Patrick Stewart on to play? Like, if you were going to have anyone on to play Monopoly, like, how fantastic would that be? Because then they could just sit there and cut up and talk about, you know, old times between the two of them. But, you know, it's a game that apparently he still cherishes. And I that just kind of struck me. Something about that, I was just like, that's just cool. So any particular stories or anything he threw out there as favorites?
So for me, the talking about how they had to heat up the bath and like the sequence of that and like you're saying, dirt poor, right? Like they
one
made
up, one down.
Yeah, they made it work. You know, just that whole childhood of like listing in on the parents as well. It's hilarious. That's what you do as a kid. So yeah, just all those ones. And then the other one were his crushes. And I'm like, yeah, no, I get it. Like, cause I could put myself in that position of being in behind stage and being, you know, I can't move. And here's this beautiful woman sitting in front of me and yeah, I'm going to chat her up too. Like it's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything stick out for you, Chris?
Just his whole overall work ethic, because he's like every actor should have to start at the bottom and work their way up like this. So they appreciate when they get there how important everybody is and how integral everybody is to make a play, a movie, a show, whatever. Everybody's got an important part to play because he did most of those jobs in the theater and just kind of how scrappy he is. And he did a frontal nudity scene that, you know, nobody ever saw, which I thought was kind of like, okay, cool. Yeah, you know, like get your tits out. That's awesome. But like, that's just really weird that Sir Patrick got naked.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It was all of it.
I will say, you mentioning about like going through everything. That's what reminds me of the Ishmael story of the Trader Tales. Mm-hmm. Is because he goes through all of those low end, you know,
jobs
in order to actually appreciate how it all kind of gets together and how it all works. Mm-hmm. So. I think that's what it was that reminded me of that story.
I like how serious he was that first season of TMG. And yeah. Dude, seriously?
Yeah.
And they're making fun of him. Is he any real? He was taking himself too seriously, but I could just see him in his booming voice being like,
oh, yeah.
Fun. Seriously. And they're all like, okay, dude.
Chill it.
Jesus. Yeah, I can imagine how that would go, especially after reading Will Wheaton's book, talking about how Brent Spiner kept getting him in trouble. And, you know, and then every so often, you know, you see outtakes pop up on different things. And the one I keep seeing right now is the one where he's talking over the intercom. They're like, no, we got him up off the, we managed to get him up off the planet. And LeVar Burton and Michael Dorn, like, just like high five each other behind everyone else, and then everyone realizes what's going on and just start busting up. But yeah, like, yeah, I that kind of surprised me, but yeah, I could definitely see that would have been how things would have been at first. So Jen, anything in particular that stuck out that you really enjoyed?
Yeah, I really appreciated how he could just own his mistakes or his like wrong opinions. A lot of times he just flat out said, oh, I had this prejudice and I was wrong, or I learned from this, I did this thing, it was shitty. I mean, multiple times he took responsibility for his role in his relationships failing, or just different things that he did with family and people. And I just appreciate that, because you don't see that a lot from people saying, yeah, I was wrong, or I apologize, or whatever. So that was kind of refreshing. Even if some of the stuff he was talking about was a little cringy, you're like, oh, well, at least he knows that, you know. And I really liked, I thought it was funny that Ian McKellen tried to talk him out of doing Star Trek. Like,
yeah, I was just like, what?
Not expected. I mean, could you imagine if he'd have listened? But and the squirrel story was cute. I found that kind of wholesome.
Yeah.
His wife connected with the squirrel after all those years, so.
Yeah.
Sean, any stories in particular stick out to you?
Alex, I really enjoyed his early life, like from kids to like doing the reporter thing and stuff like that. And I really enjoy that, like, because I listened to quite a few autobiographies and all that. And I always enjoy the before they were famous kind of stories. So, like, and he lived a full life before getting into TNG and stuff like that. The TNG stuff, like, I pretty well knew. Oh, there wasn't any new stuff in there, so it was kind of, I always find it kind of cool though that, like, if he drops like an episode name, or, well, we were filming this episode or whatever, and but then you find out what's going on in his life. Because I can remember when I watched that episode, like, when it first came out, I knew how old I was and stuff like that. So then I can kind of like, oh, well, I was this age and this was happening to him. That was kind of cool. So
that is cool.
Yeah, all that stuff. It was just the theater stuff that I was like, and there's a lot of it.
There's a lot of it. The majority, if you're planning on reading this book, just realize, would y'all say at least a third? I'd almost go half. I'd say at least a third of this book is. Half.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably half of this book is about theater stuff.
And I don't begrudge it at all. Like, a huge part of his life. I get it. I just don't have the background to appreciate it.
Same.
Not on me. Not on him. But it make the kind of bog it down a little bit. Like, if Deb and I listened to this together, because we on the trip to like pick up Patrick and stuff like that. It's like an 8-hour drive. So we listen to it. She was not happy with all the philandering because she did not know about it. So he was fairly disgusted afterwards. And like, yeah. And then even she said, like, boy, there's a lot of theater stuff in this. Like, yeah. So
the whole time I was listening, the more it kept going with the theater, I was like, oh boy, the lads are gonna really love this, like this part of the book.
I get it. Actually, it's a shop. One of my coworkers, she has a theater background, and she went to some play as a part of the class, and she was reading the playbill, and Sir Patrick Stewart was in it, and she's like, her eyes like lit up, and then she looked at her professor, and her professor was looking right at her going, yep. And they met him backstage. They went and talked to the agent backstage, and because normally it's like, oh, it's Star Trek fans, they want Star Trek, and so normally they turn them down, but the professor is like, yeah, this is a theater group, and her eyes like lit up. And yeah, she had in-depth conversations about the theater with Sir Patrick Stewart.
That's awesome.
Really cool. So. That's pretty cool.
I will say, I really want to find, I don't know how I'll do it, but I'll find the two, like when Ian and Patrick are on stage together, I want to find that show somehow. Mm-hmm. And watch that show, because I think it'd be an amazing one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, when he, oh my God, what was I going to say? He mentions well, what were you just saying, Sean? Shit, bring me back to your, you triggered something like for me.
Backstage and.
Yeah. Okay. Never mind. It completely disappeared as soon as I opened my mouth. So delete this entire conversation.
Oh, no, it's staying in.
But it was so good, too.
Well, maybe you'll think of it here in a second. So thoughts on the writing. I mean, you know, it's kind of hard to critique. I mean, granted, I'm sure, you know, he had, you know, a decent editor and, you know, that type of thing. And who knows if it was, you know, if he dictated this or if he actually wrote it himself, like, you know, actually sat down at a keyboard and did it. But, I mean, I thought the writing was fine. The story, for me, it really comes alive from the way he's telling it. So, although, Sean, you said there's obviously a benefit to actually reading the physical book because of the pictures. So would have been nice if maybe they had included those as a PDF download or something. Because, you know, sometimes they do that. So maybe they did. Maybe I need to go back and check it, and I just completely missed it. So, but, yeah, I thought the writing was fine. Any other thoughts on the writing?
I will listen to anything Patrick Stewart writes over anything Nick Offerman writes.
Fair enough.
It was just so easy to listen to, where I find Nick, you're like, okay, and we use the thesaurus for this entire okay. Yeah, like it's more brain power is required for Nick Offerman, and you really have to like concentrate, at least for me. That could just be my attention span. But Patrick, it was a very flowing, fluid story. I didn't feel like it was chunked up. It just kind of all, I feel like it flowed together really well.
All right. I guess we're going to jump to the next question. Would you read another book by the author? And the answer would be yes, because I'd actually like to hear more stuff about the TNG stuff and more stuff about you know, doing X-Men and stuff like that. I know he does hit some of the higher spots in those things. I'm second guessing it now. I'd almost rather have him doing interviews with the, you know, with his castmates and to be able to talk about that way. So, yeah. But yeah, if he wrote a second book and it's like, you know, hey, here's my second act, although I'm just like, you're 80 someone. How, you're just now hitting a second act? Oh my God. Yeah, I would listen to it. So
yeah, I can't see him doing another one.
No, I can't either. Yeah.
Yeah. It would be awesome if he did like TNG through the years or something like that.
Yeah.
That would fly off the shelves, because I think that's Star Trek fans. That's what they wanted in this one. Mm-hmm. And like making it so that,
false
advertising there, you bastard. But definitely, because there really wasn't that much TNG stuff, like a chapter, maybe. So
there were sprinklings of it throughout the, like, even there were sprinklings of it, but it was definitely not the focus of the book by any means.
So, no.
Oh, that was the thing. When he talks about how excited or surprised, shocked he was that people were showing up to hear him talk at a con. And I'm like, laughing internally in the buildup, because I know what a con's like. I know how crazy it can get and how the fans are. But he's just like, is anybody here to see me speak? It's like thousands of people. His innocence was adorable for that kind of stuff, because he was so clueless with everything. Until he was a part of it. Like, what's Dune? What's Star Trek? What's this? You know, like, what's the X-Men?
I even forgot about Dune. Yeah.
Sitting beside Sting, and it's like, and he's just like, wow.
Detachment from pop culture was.
I'm like, I make fun of you too for that.
And he's got such a good humor about it. You know, he just laughs it off. And
it is interesting because, I mean, granted, at that time, I mean, you know, cons are definitely different than they were, you know, at that time than they are now. Like, because, you know, now, you know, you get on a TV series and you're just like, you know, if it's remotely popular, I might be set. Like, I may even have to do any more episodes at this point. You know, especially like some of the people from The Walking Dead, like Norman Reedus flat out said, I make more money doing cons than I do doing the show. Like, it's like the show is what I do to promote the con visit. So, but yeah, no, I totally agree, Sean. It would, like I said, that's kind of one of those things I'd almost rather see it as a roundtable type thing to get other opinions on it as well. Yeah. But no, yes, if he did a book where he was just talked about, you know, he just, you know, even if it wasn't very big, if it was just talking about, you know, how things changed from season one to seasons and just anecdotal stories where he's talking about, oh, I remember the time that Brent did this and it was hilarious, you know, that type of thing. That'd be funny. So, kind of looking through here, some of the other questions, if they're really kind of relevant. Any lingering questions from the book? Anything? I mean, we've already kind of said we'd like more TNG, X-Men type stuff or whatever, but... I can't think of anything really right offhand.
I'd be curious about, like, he talked about his reprisal of Picard. I'd be curious about his thoughts on his reprisal of Professor X, and just, you know, diving back into that more too, because like you said, he barely touches on the X-Men at all, and he was born for that role. So,
yeah. This is going to be a stupid question. Would you recommend this book?
It would be person specific though.
It would be. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I just don't, I wouldn't recommend it to just.
If there was anybody in theater that would stay away from this because of who it is, like if they were like, oh, it's Star Trek, I'd be like, no, you need to listen to this.
Yes.
Theater part. Yeah. But I think I'm more surprised at who I would recommend it to. Mm-hmm.
I'm just proud that I picked a book that even Sean liked, because my books, he's like, I'm good. So I managed one that he would recommend to other people.
Kudos on you, Jen.
Let's see. We already talked about the narrator. There's not really any tropes or anything. Okay, so here's a good question. If you could ask the author anything, what would it be?
Could you come to my house?
Yeah.
Can you read the phone book to me?
I know, right?
Can I have a hug? Can I hug you?
That would be, and you know what, knowing him, from what it sounds like, the way he is, he'd probably be like, absolutely. Especially if you like, you know, you remind me of my grandfather. He'd probably be like, absolutely.
Yeah. I'd be curious what character he never got to play that he would love to play.
Oh, that's a good question.
On Broadway. No, he got to
do that. No. In movies or TV, you got to narrow that
down. Oh, no, yeah, you have to narrow it down.
Otherwise, you'll get an answer you'll never understand.
Yeah, otherwise his answer, you're going to be like, oh, okay, never heard of that. I don't know what you're talking about.
It'll make me make it, I'll go look it up.
Well, that's true. Yeah, you are that type of person, so. I'm like you, though. I would be interested to see, to hear what his thoughts are on, just not the fact that the characters that he's created have stood the, you know, the test of time, and there are still people discovering these characters and falling in love with them, you know, Professor X, you know, Jean-Luc Picard, but the fact that we are clamoring for more. Like, it's 2024. You haven't played these characters in some cases for decades. And people are like, no, we want more of you in this character. It's not just the character. We want more of you as this character.
I think what a lot of that is that his characters that are extremely popular are all about selling hope. You look at Picard, it's about selling hope on humanity. If you look at X-Men, it's about hope on living between the mutants and like, yeah. So I don't know. I see it. I see most of his roles like that. He can sell hope really well.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Well, anything else anyone want to cover with the book in particular? I think we pretty much all enjoyed it. There was a lot of theater. We all agree on that. And we could have used a little more Star Trek, a little more X-Men. But
I kind of liked that his name was born out of a sort of a joke / derogatory nickname for his dad. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought it was funny. I mean, because Paddy is kind of a derogatory term for Irish people, mm-hmm. by the Brits, and his dad was just like, oh yeah, bring it on, name my kid that. You know, so I appreciated that little bit of trivia, I guess.
And then for him to meet Irish people and be like, oh, they aren't as bad as I thought they were.
One of us. Yeah, you're Patrick, you're one of us.
That's nice. All right, well, I guess we'll go ahead and wrap up the conversation here and move on to what else we've been reading. Real quick before we go into that, our next book, even though we're recording this at the beginning of May, May's book is Starter Villain by John Scalzi. That was your pick, right, Ray?
Yep.
Okay. So we will be recording that at the end of May and getting that up. Hopefully on time. We'll see. I'm still unpacking, as you can tell if you're watching the video version. But that being said, what else have you been reading? We'll start with Ray.
Yeah, so I've been reading, and I finished School Days, which mm-hmm. is Nathan Bowles' continuation of Ishmael, and I've started Working Class, which is that continuation of that. I was a little surprised. I didn't realize it was going to be Ishmael. I thought we were going off into a new direction, so I'm appreciative that it's Ishmael and a few other characters are back. They hint at one character, or they mention one character. I'm really hoping that we can see Al again. That'd be mm-hmm. amazing.
Oh, that would be cool.
But anyway, yeah. So yeah, that's what I've been reading. And I know we've covered the series on this podcast before. I don't know if we'll dive into it again. I think there's a third book coming out as well. I'm not sure, but there's two so far anyway. So.
Okay. I'm going to have to check them out because I do love the Ishmael story. So. Chris, what else have you been reading?
Four books. So, because it's been a minute, but I've read more, but I will only do the four. So I read for a book club that I'm a part of. It's called Verity by Colleen Hoover. I did not pick this book. No. And then I read, it's just a general sort of book club, right? Like there's no theme to it. And it's a bunch mm-hmm. of women. And it's, you know, this is my third book I think I've read. So, and last month was my pick, which was Hail Mary. Like, so that was my pick for the group.
How did that go over?
The people, they all loved it. They all really liked it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, so I read Verity for the book club. No. And then I read Alchemist by Michael Scott, which is a not series. That not that Michael Scott. Irish. It is I think it's middle school, maybe YA fiction about Nicholas Flamel, who's a real person, which is pretty cool. It's really good. There's six books in the series. I read the first one. It's about 300 pages. It's very quick. It's good. It's really good. It's an interesting story. It does a lot of research into Scottish and Irish and all that kind of the lore and the gods and goddesses and stuff. And now I'm listening to Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell by Suzanne Clark. Which, holy hell.
I have to give you the book back, Sean.
It's in his backpack because I'm like, there's no way I'm actually going to physically read this because it's a brick. I'm listening to it and it's 32 hours. So I'm about halfway through. It is delightful.
I thought you would like it.
Yeah, it took me a little bit to get into it, like most books that big, but yeah. Like I'm in the middle of it now. So I'm like, okay, I'm good. I've got like 15 hours left. And now I'm reading the third Crescent City book by Sarah J. Maas. It's a lot. This is my reality television in a form of a book. A lot of eye rolling, a lot of like, why would you do that? That's so stupid. A lot is happening and nothing is happening, which I feel like is the whole theme of the Crescent City books. A lot happens, a lot of world building, a lot of name dropping, a lot of information at you, but also nothing happens. And a lot, there's three different stories going on at the same time. And it's, it's a lot. It's, anyway. I don't know why it needed to be that long. I'm happy.
Jen, what else have you been reading?
Well, it has also been a minute for me since I've been on here. So I have a few books. Currently reading, what am I reading? I'll get back to you on that. Recently, I read The Ones We're Meant to Find, which is a Cli-Fi book sent in a not-so-distant future about a sister, a couple sisters. One of them wakes up on an island knowing she has a sister but no other memories. The other one thinks her sister's dead and doesn't know she's looking for her on this island. And it's set in this future where they're like living in cloud cities because we've destroyed the planet and there's like a refugee system to get in there. And it's really interesting and kind of lots of twists along the way. I read The King's Speech a while back, like based on the book or the movie that the book was based on, I guess, or vice versa. I read the first two books of the Delirium series, and then I couldn't go on because I got annoyed with what they did. But that was, I didn't realize when I started it, a YA novel. And it was also set in like future dystopian future where love is considered a disease. And yeah, it's, there's a religion built on science and basically, yeah. But I couldn't get past book two, like I said. And then I read Greenwich, all about Greenwich, England, and the history of that place. And I'm kind of, as you can see, alternating between nonfiction, fiction, sci-fi kind of thing. And I read Artemis at the beginning of the year. So Hidden Figures, that's the one I'm reading. Yeah, so that's one of my fiction ones. So the book based, that the movie's based on, and it's sort of different because it jumps around a lot more. So I'm waiting for it to kind of tie into the movie, but yeah. Anyways, lots of stuff going on.
Well, hopefully it does. Unlike, we'll get to that in a second. Sean, what else have you been reading?
I'm finishing up the Fear Saga right now by Stephen Moss. I think I was talking about it last time. It's a 3-book series. First one is Fear of the Sky, then Fear of the Survivors, and then I'm just doing Fear of the Future. It's basically aliens are gonna be coming to Earth to conquest, and they sent 8 people to soften up the human race first and like metallic bodies kind of thing. And the first 2 books were really, really good. They were they stayed grounded, like the technology wasn't too far in advance, but the stories were really good. But this 3rd book is, it's pretty far in the future, and now it's like hard sci-fi, and I'm finding the characters aren't like, they're becoming jaded and cynical, and they're not fun to hear about or read about anymore, and the story is like kind of starting to drag. So this definitely the weakest of the 3 books, but there's only 3 books, I gotta finish it. But yeah, and then I'll probably get into the Nathan Lowell series again. The problem is those new books, no man, I gotta like reread all of them first, go through Ishmael's Adventures again. I hate like just jumping into like a latter book.
I feel the same way, especially if it's been a little bit, because then you're just like, wait, are they referencing something I forgot about?
I
go back.
So
yeah.
I gotta carve away a good chunk of time for that.
I'll admit I may have missed a couple, but for the most part, where they picked up and kind of continued on, it's like, oh yeah, no, I know where we are.
So. See, I'm about to start inventory, and I'm gonna be doing a lot of walking around, probably with my headset on, or my earphone on. So that might actually be a good plan for me, because I always have to have something kind of going on in the background. But that's an idea. I might explore that idea. So. I finished Brute Force by Scott Meyer. It is typical Scott Meyer. Let's take an idea, you know, kind of a sci-fi type idea and make it fun and silly. And so it's literally, dystopian future. People are barely surviving. There's a lot of killing in it, but it's all very comical. It's not like super gory or anything like that. And then aliens show up, and where they're basically like, we're going to give you medicine and food and all of the knowledge that y'all have lost, but we need some of y'all to come join us. And they're like, okay, well, when are we going? And they're like, well, we basically need y'all to go kill these other things because we don't know how to do that. And they're like, what do you mean? You have spaceships and, you know, like you can fold space to move to different, but you don't know how to kill things. And they're just like, no, we don't know how to do that. There's three different aliens. There's one called the Pile. It's literally a bunch of rocks, and it all communicates with itself over even light speed. There are the adventurers, and I can't remember exactly what they look like, but like they get off on learning new information. So like, if you were to tell them, did you know my middle name is whatever, like that would be like the best thing ever for them. And then there are the builders, and the builders are like firmly against destroying anything. And so it's like, well, we have to destroy the thing to kill the bad guys. And they're just like, but you're destroying, you're not building. Our purpose is to build. And it's very, like I said, it's very Scott Meyer. I don't see there being a sequel to it. It's just a fun kind of one-off book. So I did enjoy it. I read Bridge to Bat City by Ernest Cline. It was read by Felicia Day. It is definitely not a young adult. It's a kid's book. And it's a fictionalized telling of how bats actually moved into the Austin area. But it does go into how it really came about. Like it pulls a bunch of different time periods together. So a bunch of like, you know, famous, you know, Austin/Texas people come into play. But it does talk about how when they originally moved in, like, you know, the city was just like, oh no, absolutely not. We've got to get these bats out of here. And then slowly but surely, you know, the scientists in the community were like, yeah, hey, have y'all noticed there's no mosquitoes? That's kind of a nice thing, isn't it? You can actually go out to a concert and not have to be, you know, attacked by mosquitoes, especially considering we're right next to a river. But yeah, it's a kind of, and it's funny because at the end of it, Ernest Cline talks about, he used to tell this story to his kids and was like, you know, I need to write this down sometime. And he finally did. So, well, that was kind of cool. And then I've also read, Shift and Dust, which are books 2 and 3 of the Silo series. That was our book last month. And I was telling Sean before the show that, we talked about in the show that if you watch the Apple TV Plus series, there's a lot of stuff in that series that isn't in the book. And we hypothesized, well, the second book's a prequel. Maybe it's in there. It is not. we may or may not, you know, I may or may not suggest, you know, reading the other two books, or if anyone else is interested, you know, maybe just having a side conversation about it sometime. But yeah, if you're watching the series, most of the stuff, from what Sean said, the climax of the series at the end of the series is about halfway through the first book. So the majority of the Apple TV Plus series is not in any of the three books. So it's completely made up backstory. It may be perfectly fine. It seems like it fills in character information that may or may not be pertinent. But I'm probably going to end up going back and rewatch, you know, and watching it now. But knowing that it's not in the books is kind of just like, oh, okay. So I wonder if, you know, when they go to the second season, are we going to stick back to the books, or are we going to go on our own adventure? What's going on here? So anyway, and then I finished next month's book, Starter Villain by John Scalzi. And I've only read two John Scalzi books, but I'm thinking I may have to explore more of them, because the ones that I've read, I've greatly enjoyed, you know, just go ahead and, you know, showing my hand on next month's book. But I've read this, and I've read the Kaiju Preservation Society, and I greatly enjoyed it as well. And so, yeah, when we talk about that, I have a feeling I'm probably going to be going through more of his catalog and seeing what else he's written. So, well, that is it for the month, ladies and gentlemen. If you would, please give us a 5-star rating on, I guess it's now just iTunes and like YouTube, Google Play. You know, you can still listen to the show on Google some places, not here in the U.S.
We have been given our warning.
You've been given your warning. So, okay. So they're rolling it.
Actually, I freaked out because they told me mine was ending, and then I realized, yeah, I could keep listening, but now it's also telling me mid-June. So,
yeah. So if you, you know, it is just an RSS feed. If you do have a particular, podcast player that you like, just go to the site, click, you know, down, you know, copy the RSS feed and put it into your player, and it'll do it that way. So you don't have to go through iTunes or anywhere else to listen to the show, but it is pretty much, I've put it out there on most everything out there. It's just a lot of these companies have either gone under or just decided, no, we're not doing podcasts anymore. So I don't think it's going to go anywhere on YouTube, and I'm pretty sure Apple's not going to do anything with it. So those would be probably the best two places to go, would be YouTube or iTunes. But then you can always just go to the website, epicallygeeky.com. You can find all the shows we do, including this one, Epically Geeky, Sustainably Geeky, and Creatively Geeky. You can follow us on social media, at least on Facebook and Instagram. I'm not really dealing with the other ones, just to find out when new episodes come out. Where can we find you online, Ray?
The Reluctant Yeti on Instagram, and you can see our bookcase.
Yes, absolutely. And it turned out fantastic, especially if you've been listening to Creative Geeky. Chris, where can we find you online?
On Instagram at Moody Midlife.
Jen?
Instagram and Twitter at Hetsgonavini, and Sustainably Geeky, available where you listen to podcasts.
Sean?
Screwing with Wikipedia, as always, and your favorite broken toy on Instagram, spelled the Canadian way.
The Canadian way. And as always, you can find my individual wacky adventure online at Optimus Jane on Facebook and Instagram. For everyone on the site, have a good night.
This has been a presentation of the Epically Geeky Network.